Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's August 14th. It's a Wednesday, 2019. Several weeks before the NFL season begins. Still some time to talk about some divisional odds. We're going to get to the Raiders and talk with our friend Ted Wynn of The Athletic later on. But first, a frequent contributor to the show, a very entertaining Twitter follow, someone who appears to attract very angry people, though. I think it's fair to say on Twitter. We're going to talk about some of those situations today. It's our friend Jeff Schwartz of SB Nation. Jeff, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I bring a lot of those trolls my direction with some of the stuff I tweet. I know what I'm doing, but yes, there are some angry people that think they can get under my skin, but it doesn't really happen that way.
Let's start. We're going to talk about a couple things that you have some insight into today and have been brought up on Twitter recently. Let's talk about the tweet you posted recently about an empty protection. I believe it was a Florida State game, a Florida State offensive play where there was an empty protection. You asked people to explain what went wrong on the play. And after you gave your answer, people then argued with you and told you, the former NFL offensive lineman, that you were wrong and did not understand the protection on this play. Why do you think people have these conceptions of offensive line play, and how can people get smarter about understanding whether it's a protection, whether it's how an offensive lineman moves in a particular play? How can people not be so dumb about offensive line play?
Well, I think you first have to understand that we have assignments, right? So we have specific things that are goals in every play, right? We have typically five guys to block, right? In some fashion or some form or whatever technique we use, we have five guys to block. Sometimes we have to block maybe six guys. There's certain times where, you know, you block one, you go to someone else. But we have an assignment, especially in pass pro, right? We have assignments, and the reason for those assignments is so no one is confused on the offense. So if we know who we're blocking, the running back knows who's he blocking. Let's say the tight ends in the game, they know who they're blocking. But most importantly, the quarterback knows who is hot, site is weak side, free runner. So we have to work in understand what's happening. And also, lastly, part of the equation is the quote-unquote hot receiver, right? So the guy on every play who is responsible their route if they see an unblocked time that's indicated by a quarterback pointing to a certain guy. So when you see quarterbacks look to a wide receiver, point to a couple of guys, typically they're telling them, hey, it takes these two, it takes this guy to come. And yes, there are times when their routes, especially play action pass, there is no hot or sight guy, right? You just have to hope that you're counted for everyone in that protection. So we all have rules and assignments. When you understand that that is the general idea of offensive line play, then you can understand how a guy can run free and not be our fault. And I think people just expect us to block the five guys that show up because we should be blocking everyone. It doesn't work quite that way. Yeah, it'd be ideal if we always block the five most dangerous, but sometimes it doesn't unfold that way, and people have a hard time believing that the left guard in the situation could block nobody and still get a plus on the play. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the way it works. It's hard to look at, in this case, third guy is a guy that's running full speed who runs a 4-5, and you as an offensive lineman are supposed to then turn and find a way to block him. And so I just don't get it. Like, when I tweet this out, like when Dan Orlovsky, for example, who works at ESPN, obviously, when he has a diagram play, whether it's on GetUp or whether it's on his Twitter page, like, I sit there, I watch it, and I just take notes. I don't call Dan up and be like, Dan, I think you're wrong about this. Because Dan played like 11 years in the NFL, and he knows coverages and routes way better than I do. He knows what the goal of each play is, passing wise, better than I do. And I learned, you know, Matt Bowen, who also at ESPN, like, when he diagrams a defensive play, they use different terminology than we do, so it's a little different than what he might say is actually happening on our side of the ball. But the concept-wise, I'm learning. I don't question, hey, Matt, is this actually, you know what, Matt, I think it's actually three robber and not three buzz. Like, I just listen to the guy whose job it is and play the position, and it seems like with offensive line play, people just want to disagree with me. I tweet this too, it's true. There's no disagreement. Like, this is not up for debate. I'm telling you how it is. And part of the reason why is I have a group of people, mostly on the Joe Moore Award Committee, and it's a distinguished group of former offensive linemen, of scouts, of professionals, and we discuss all these plays typically before they go onto Twitter, and we are in consensus on what's happening during the play. So the idea that I just put something up there, and over, it's not open for debate, folks. If I put it out there, I'm telling you what the right answer is.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think it's funny because, you know, you mentioned, like, of course, the goal is to block the five most dangerous defensive players on any given play, of course. But, like, literally every defensive coordinator, not every, but the vast majority of defensive coordinators are going to try and confuse you. They're going to try and make you not understand who the five most dangerous players are before the snap. And then especially if you have an inexperienced line or an inexperienced quarterback, they're going to try and manipulate that. So you end up with an unblocked guy. That's the whole point of sending a, you know, of hopefully sending the right blitz package. So it does seem like, you know, it would be surprising if there weren't times where a guy ran free and it wasn't the offensive line's fault.
In that specific clip, if you want to go back, I might post it again. When you post this up there, maybe I'll link the tweet to it. But, like, this is an exquisite pressure from Alabama. It's week one. I believe Florida State's breaking a freshman quarterback. It's like a pressure that you see in the NFL. They're trapping the hot guy, too. Like, so even if he threw hot, it might have been an interception. Like,
right.
It's a pro pressure that they've game planned for 3 weeks now to play Florida State. And the quarterback had never seen it before. If this was week 11 and they're playing LSU or Auburn, I'd be like, you know what? You know, they should have seen that. It's their fault. But I'm like, you know what? Pass off Alabama. You figured out a way to beat Florida State on this play. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in terms of if you're a fan, if you are a fan who wants to be smarter watching offensive line play, you can listen to an offensive lineman, but you're not in someone's living room necessarily. What can they do to sort of be smarter about watching, you know, whether it's watching the All-22 on Game Pass, whether it's just watching a game back, you know, just trying to focus on the offensive line? Yeah. What can they do to get smarter about watching offensive line if they want to not you know, evaluate at a pro level, but just understand what's happening from play to play?
I think that's tough to do. I think it's easiest to just see in pass protection, right? Because the guys are often just individual blocks. Yeah, I think you have to just look at where the quarterback is at times as well, because that plays a lot into pass protection. So there are certain landmarks a quarterback is supposed to be in the pocket, and if he doesn't reach those landmarks, for example, if he goes past, let's say, 9.5 yards on a 7-step drop, which really it's just like shotgun now, so it's more of a 3-step drop out of gun. But if he's at 9.5 yards, that's a little bit deep for a lot of tackles. You know, you have to climb to about 8 yards or 8.5 yards. So maybe that pressure or maybe that sack is not really on the offensive lineman. It's tough to diagnose in the exact moment of that happening. But, you know, in the run game, I think it's super hard to really understand what's happening because, you know, we have a lot of combo blocks. There's guys pulling. There's things happening. But I think the one misconception I think when we talk about offensive lines as a whole is – typically when you have a bad offensive line, it's not just the personnel, but it's how you are bad. And the way I say that is when a different guy messing up every single time, that makes you a bad offensive line. If you have one bad offensive lineman, you can get by. Typically, you hide them, you find ways to protect them. But if you have a bad offensive line, you can notice this as you watch the games. You know, first it's the left guard, and then the next play is the right tackle, and then it's the left tackle. And, it's a really good play. And then here's the center. So if you notice different guys messing up every single play, that's how you really can tell, in my opinion, if the offensive line is good or bad. And that's one thing to maybe look at. Oh, hey, the left guard messed up here. Well, then the right guard. And so you can evaluate for yourself how good they're playing. But I just think it's a hard position to really evaluate. I try my best to educate, and a lot of people have asked me, is there materials I can read? And I just say, you got to follow me. There's a couple of people. If you want to ask me, I'll tell you on Twitter who to follow. Read what they write. You're having Ted on later this podcast. I think Ted is really good, you know, for quote unquote being an amateur of talking about offensive line play. He understands the basic concepts. And if you follow him as well, he can help you out. I mean, there's certain resources on the, you know, in the Twitter world, that can really help you at least learn basic concepts.
Yeah, and I mean, I imagine it must be really tough because I'm not sitting here grading offensive linemen on a week-to-week basis, and I don't think I would be qualified to do so. I mean, do you think lay people can do that? Like, do you think you have to be a former lineman or someone who really, you know, innately understands the responsibilities, and especially when running plays, have to understand the play calls and what the responsibilities are on a play-by-play basis to great offensive linemen?
I mean, this is, you know, the question I always, you know, talk with PFF about, and I like those guys. They're always open to the discussion, which is nice about them. Look, I don't always agree with their grades, mm-hmm. But I do think they generally, you know, hit the nail, you know, on the head. I mean, you block your guy, you block your guy, right? I think the one thing that we disagree about, you know, just former offensive linemen and PFF and maybe other analytics, is the idea of finishing, right? So finishing your block is not really about pancaking someone, because these are 300-pound bodies. You know, they're not falling over easily unless they're getting tripped up. Mm-hmm. But the idea of finishing your block is just about giving that little bit of extra effort to move your guy further than he wants to go. So you're mm-hmm. moving another human further than that human wants to go. That is finishing. And that's not measured in analytics. That's not measured by grading offensive linemen, you know, analytically or by PFF. And I understand finishing typically is extra. Like you made your block and then you finish. I mean, Quinn Nelson obviously is, I think, the great example of that, right? He makes mm-hmm. his block and he makes guys pay for going against him. Mm-hmm. And that little extra is what makes offensive linemen elite. It's what makes them valued in the NFL. It's what makes them fear in the NFL. And that little extra, you can see it on Sundays, Mondays, whenever, but that's not going to be part of the grading process most people have. It is for offensive linemen. I've had offensive line coaches, Bill, who just grade you on finish. I didn't get a grade for how I played in the game. I just got a grade of how I finished according to that coach. Because if you are a high-level finishing offensive line, you're typically going to be good, because you can't really finish guys unless your technique is really good. And, you know, Howard Mudd is big into that. I love Howard Mudd. That's really his philosophy, is that, you know, if you are a good finishing offensive line, if you focus on how to finish players, you're going to be a great offensive line. Mm-hmm. And that really is how you can, I think, watch offensive lines. And how do they finish their blocks? Do they push the guy past the quarterback? Do they push the defender past the hole and make him pay for obviously, you know, on that play? So that's a good way to watch offensive lines.
That's really interesting. Yeah, for sure. All right, Jeff, well, let's get back to talking about the NFL in a second. But first, guys, we all get credit card bills every month. There's multiple payments, multiple due dates, a hassle to keep track of, and you don't want to get behind. So wouldn't it be easier to just have one payment at a lower rate? You can, with a credit card consolidation loan from my friends at Lightstream. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay, and the rate is fixed, so it'll never go up over the life of the loan. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for my listeners, you can apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount, however, is to go to lightstream.com/Barnwell, lightstream.com/Barnwell. That's my last name, Barnwell. It's subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Barnwell for more information. Now back to the show. In terms of the other thing that came up on Twitter recently that you were getting some blowback for, you dared to suggest that the Browns were not going to, how can I put this? The Browns are going to go 9-7, which is obviously offensive to the entire city of Cleveland, and that they weren't your best bet to win the AFC North at the odds that were available. So, why do you hate the Cleveland Browns?
So funny, right? 9-7 is like hate. I just have a lot of questions about them.
Right.
I think it's interesting when we talk about NFL teams and we talk about their success or not, we often focus on a lot on the head coach, right, or the play caller, right? Like, how good is that coach at leading the team, calling plays? What value do they bring to the overall makeup of your team?
Sure.
And for some reason with Cleveland, we're just kind of like ignoring they have a first-year head coach.
Right.
So Freddie Kitchens had never been a coordinator up until last year, and he coordinated for 10-ish games on a team that was going nowhere. If he won or lost, it was not going to affect, you know, his job status, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's never had to be in front of the room. He's never had to deal with personalities on the entire team. He's never had to call plays with the thought process of, hey, how does this affect my defense? How about my decision making process for later in the game? Mm-hmm. You know, oh, do I challenge this play? Oh, wait, I have to call a play now. He's never done any of that before, and we have just totally ignored the amount of pressure. And I wrote about this, Bill, and maybe you could find someone else. Maybe it was like George Seifert, who replaced Walsh or something, and who had the most pressure on them as a first year head coach. Right? They don't make the playoffs this year. That's considered a bad season for the Browns. Right. Normally, you come in, you're 2-14 the year before. You know, you're turning the roster over. So, to me, there's just a lot of noise around the Browns. And look, I think Baker Mayfield is a great quarterback. Right? Mm-hmm. He's on the way to being a great quarterback. He has all the skills. He performed better last year than I thought he would. I give him props for that. But, dude, man, like, you're the only guy talking right now.
Right.
No one else in the NFL is talking as much as you are, right? Pat Mahomes turned down endorsement deals until he made it in the NFL because he did not want to cause a distraction in his life outside of making it, being the MVP in the NFL. We hear nothing out of Carson Wentz. I mean, even Dak Prescott, he's going through a contract. We hear nothing from him. We hear from his representative. Like, only Baker Mayfield is out there talking all the time, doing interviews. To me, it's a lot of noise around Cleveland. And typically the noisiest teams in the offseason do not win in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And lastly, to my point about the Steelers, we've heard nothing from them. Zero. Right. Big Ben has canceled his radio appearances. He has heard the criticism. He has tried to be a better leader and better teammate. We've heard nothing from Tomlin. Devin Bush comes out and has like 25 tackles in his first game, and if he is really going to be that good, that's going to solidify their defense. They still have good to great wide receivers. Like, they're a good football team, and we're just discounting them because a wide receiver left their team. Like, oh, big deal. So I think you're getting plus money on the Steelers to win the division. Like, that to me is what you should bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's not even like the Browns, you know, were a team that went 13-3 last year. It's like the Bears, for example, were 12-4, and people are thinking the Bears are going to decline, which I think they will probably decline a little bit. But, you know, I can see it saying, hey, we were a 12-win team last year. We brought back a ton of our talent. Like, you can make a pretty strong case for the Bears, you know, still being a really good football team. With the Browns, I think the Browns are going to be better, but they were 7-8-1 last year. I mean, like, it's not as if, you know, they were like we're saying they're going to decline. Like, if you say they're going to go 9-7, you're saying they're going to improve by a win and a half. And that's still not going to be necessarily enough to win the AFC North.
Right. And I think that, you know, Browns fans want to point to the schedule last year, right? The last eight games are 5-3. Well, guess what? Their five wins were against non-playoff teams, you know, including like, you know, the Falcons who could have used me and you on defense. the Panthers who had a quarterback that couldn't throw the ball downfield.
Right.
And the three teams they lost to, they lost to the Chiefs, got crushed at home, playoff team. They went to Houston, lost, got crushed in Houston. And they lost to the Ravens in week 17. Like,
right.
They didn't play well against the best teams on their schedule, and now they make the biggest jump this year in the toughness of pass defenses they face, which obviously is a huge component to winning in this league. And I just want to wait and see. Like, I don't know what's wrong with saying, hey, guys, the Browns are supremely talented. They have a lot of pieces. They're a young team. They have a new head coach. Let's just see how they do this year before I proclaim them to win the Super Bowl this year. Like, I just want to see how they play. I guess it's a cop-out in our world of making predictions. I just trust the Steelers more than I do the Browns right now.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. I think saying the Browns are on the right track, there's a lot of young talent there, it's great. I agree with that entirely. If they won the division, would I be shocked? Absolutely not. I could totally see them winning the division. But I could also see the Steelers winning the division. I could also see the Ravens maybe winning the division.
Oh, no.
You're not on the Ravens bandwagon. I mean, that's fine. No. I know you're I'm intrigued to watch them this year, but I could see them taking a step backwards, of course. The Bengals, I think just offensive line injuries, it's going to be tough. All right, Jeff, well, let's get back to talking about the NFL in a moment. But first, guys, hiring is hard. It's just very difficult to find the right candidate. Nobody wants to get stuck in that cycle of having an opening, hiring the wrong person, getting stuck with that person for a year or two, getting rid of that person, opening the same job up again, hiring a person again, having it not work out. There are a few NFL teams who went on that road for about 20 years or so. Well, good news is you don't have to do that anymore because ZipRecruiter makes it easy to find the right candidates for your job. If you go to ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, which is my exclusive web address, you can find the right candidates for whatever your job is. Because ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. And And they don't stop there. Wow, that would be crazy if they stopped there. And ZipRecruiter does not, fortunately. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter also scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. And as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at the exclusive web address that I mentioned previously. It's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show. Let's get to the other divisions. I mean, let's see if you have any other controversial opinions in there. We'll go quickly. We'll go through them. AFC East. So the Patriots are -500, as you might expect. Jets are +600. Plus 950. Dolphins are +2,500. Now, when I was in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, I saw one book that had the Dolphins at 60-1 to win the AFC East. 60.
I would look, I think that the best play here is actually, instead of taking the Patriots, which I think they win the division, I think the Super Bowl right now, they're +700 to either win the Super Bowl or win the AFC. Like, you're not going to get better odds for them to win the AFC right now. And they have the four toughest games are all at home. Cowboys, right. Chiefs, Steelers, and Browns. Like, they're going to have home field advantage. Gronk's going to come back in, late November. And they're going to lose at Foxborough, unless you have an elite defense, over the life of Tom Brady. They lose at home in the playoffs. If you're the Jets or the Ravens have elite defenses. So, I think that's the bet to make here. I wouldn't even touch any of the other, the other action in this division.
How high would the Dolphins odds have to be for you to bet, put $10 on the Dolphins to win?
Oh, jeez. See, this is the thing, Bill, is just because someone has long odds doesn't make it a good bet. I mean, what's the line from Kevin Malone in The Office? If anyone offers you 10,000 to one, you take it. So,
yes.
How about 10,000 to one? I'll take it.
Okay. I don't disagree with you there. AFC South, Colts are -110 right now, which is probably going to change pretty soon, according to the Bovada book. Texans +285, Jags 400, Titans, who were one game away from making the playoffs last year, +650.
The Colts, obviously, with Andrew Luck's ankle thing right now. I mean,
right.
Yikes. If you just want to wait maybe a couple of days, and to your point, they might move to plus money or even money, or even they might be off the board if they don't know what's happening there. I mean, I think the Colts do win the division. I'm not very high on the Texans. Last year, and Warren Sharp is great with his information. They had the easiest schedule in 20 years with quarterbacks. They played like 9 backup quarterbacks. Well, wow. This year it's not quite the same. Their offensive line, still no answers. Clowney's holding out, might be traded. Jacksonville is intriguing, right? I mean, I think Nick Foles obviously is an improvement over Bortles.
Yep.
But I think Nick Foles is just going to be like average. He was like okay last year. But their defense is really good. I mean, I think Tennessee, to your point, if Mariota is healthy, Taylor Lewan being out is a concern the first couple weeks, but Roger Saffold, left guard, really solidified the offensive line.
Yep.
They're going to be good on defense with Vrabel leading the way. That might be the smart money to put on the Titans. They've been good the last couple of years. They've kind of been knocking on the door of being a 10 or 11 win team, and maybe this is a year for them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not especially high on the Titans, but it's not like they're, they have the same odds as the Jets to win worse odds than the Jets to win the AFC East. And the Jets are, I think, a promising team, but they have the Patriots in front of them. If Andrew Luck is hurt, there's no Patriots here. I mean, and even if Andrew Luck is healthy, there's no Patriots here. So I'm a little skeptical. I think that the Titans would probably be the play there for me, but I'm not especially high in the Titans, just at those odds. AFC West, Chiefs -150, Chargers +190, Raiders +1100, Broncos +1200.
Look, I mean, obviously my
brother is
Chiefs, but I did bet against them in the AFC Championship game though, so I like winning money too. look, the Chargers have not been able to solve the Chiefs, right? For whatever, Andy Reid has owned that division since, and I know they went up there and won last year. But I think the Chiefs are still the play here, right? I mean, their offense, unless they have injuries, they're not going to be stopped. Who's going to stop them? you know, and then, you know, defensively, they've added pass rush. Frank Clark is a big upgrade over D Ford. Chris Jones is there. The Honey Badger is there. You know, they still have a little bit of problems on the edge, and their linebackers aren't terribly great, but they're going to win 12 games. So is San Diego going to, I mean, Los Angeles, sorry, geez, are they going to be able to keep up? You know, they're right side of their offensive line is a question mark. Now, they can rush the passer, they can play defense. Phillip Rivers, obviously, not worried about Melvin Gordon not being there. I still think the play here is the Chiefs. If you don't want to bet the Chiefs, then you bet the Chargers, but you can't bet the Raiders or the Broncos. They're not going to be very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Broncos might get better, but it's hard to imagine Joe Flacco, you know, beating unless Patrick Mahomes gets hurt. Like, basically, you're betting here on what happens if Patrick Mahomes gets injured. Which, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen, you know, but it's always a risk. There's always an opportunity for that to happen. But yeah, I would take the Chiefs here as well. I think the Chargers take a step backwards, and then I don't see the Raiders making any waves, and the Broncos, I think, it'd have to be higher for me to really consider that. Let's finish up there with the AFC, but. Jeff, if people want to argue with you more on Twitter, if they want to see you smack down the very angry people with like 6 followers on Twitter, if they want to find out more about offensive line play, where can people check out more of that?
Yeah, so it's at Jeff Schwartz is my Twitter. I also have a website, SchwartzNFL.com, that kind of aggregates everything I do, my writing, my radio, you know, this podcast. We'll have a link on there as well. So that's a good way to kind of get everything that I do is SchwartzNFL.com. Or, you know, my Twitter works fine, too.
Did you buy SchwartzNFL.com to keep it away from Mitch?
No, I did not buy it to get away from Mitch. Should have just said that out loud. No, I mean, maybe Mitch. Mitch will have a food website, though. He has a blog, like Mitch in the Kitch or something like that. So I think that's his website.
You should trademark that before he gets to it.
I think he's already trademarked it.
Oh, no.
That was my mom's line of work for like 30 years. I think she made sure it was done.
All right. Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure. We're going to come back with Ted Wynn on the Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, and joining us, a frequent contributor to the show, one of the best people on the internet. If you want to figure out what's actually happening watching NFL games on a weekly basis, he covers the Bay Area teams for The Athletic. It is The Athletic's Ted Wynn. Ted, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Bill?
I'm good, Ted. I'm excited to have you on. We're just talking about you took a photo with Mina and Robert Mays at Raiders training camp, where you looked like a rock star. Like, I was impressed. Like, it really looked like you were a celebrity, like an NBA player or a celebrity, and you just had these hangers on either side of you.
No, I was the little man compared to Mina and Mays. I had the least followers out of in that picture. You know, I was I felt like nobody between those two
ridiculous
giants.
Ridiculous. That's got to change. You guys should follow Ted on social media. We'll talk about that obviously at the end of this year. But let's talk about the Raiders, because I think, you know, obviously you spent a lot of time at Raiders camp, and the two big stories, I mean, that everyone's talking about coming out of Raiders camp are not necessarily all that meaningful when it comes to actual football. It's been Hard Knocks, and it's been Antonio Brown's helmet and his foot. And I guess his foot does matter, but I think there's plenty of discussion happening about that when there's a lot of other things to talk about when it comes to the Oakland Raiders. I think one of the more fascinating teams in football over the last couple of years. And let's start with, I guess, the most important player for the Raiders, which to me, at least, I would imagine, is Derek Carr. In the second year now in John Gruden's system, what have you seen from him in camp so far, and what do you think about him when it comes to the 2019 season that might be different from what we saw from Carr in 2018?
I think it's hard to tell with Carr, because he's the type of quarterback that just he'll thrive in practice and do extremely well in 7-on-7. Yeah, he's extremely intelligent. He's going to pick up the offense quickly. He's not going to make a lot of mistakes in practice. And you can't hit the quarterback in practice. And, you know, the big criticism with him is, can he handle pressure? Can he handle maneuvering the pocket when things are breaking down? Those are the questions of the car, and you can't tell that until the lights come on. Last year, he was extremely impressive, too. He had a lot of factors that went against him the last 2 years, like bad coaching in 2017. Last year, he had a terrible offensive line with Colton Miller hurt and Brandon Parker starting at right tackle. So this year is going to be a new year. They got him Trent Brown. Richie Incognito is going to hurt that. Gabe Jackson is out till at least week 5. The Raiders depending a lot on Colton Miller's development at left tackle this year. He's gained some weight. He looked better in practice. So we'll see how his offensive line does, and we'll see how he does when he actually has to play against pressure.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about that line, just briefly before we get back to Carr, I mean, the big decision that sort of came out over the summer was that the Raiders, after signing Trent Brown to what would have been a record contract for a left tackle, decided to move him back to the right side, where he had played most of his career with the 49ers. Even though last year he was an excellent, or at least very good left tackle for the Patriots. They kept Colton Miller at left tackle. Were you surprised they did that? Do you think that's the right move, given what we've seen from them, of course, with a small sample for Colton Miller?
I actually thought that they were planning to put Trent on the right when they signed him, and then there was a little mystery to whether that was going to happen or not. But to me, it makes sense because Trent is a guy who could play on either side. Colton Miller is a guy who spent a lot of time and energy developing on the left side. Mm-hmm. And I think if you move him to the right, it's really going to mess him up, and it's going to take even more time to change. I think there's some guys that could switch from one side to the other easier than others, and I don't think Miller's that type of player. I think Brown is. And in the AFC West, you have to be able to block both edges because there's so many talented pass rushers in the AFC West, like Chargers have Melvin Ingram, and they have Joey Bosa. So you have to be able to block both edges, and I think putting Trent Brown on the right side and having him lock down that side is just as valuable as him playing on the left.
Yeah, just a really good point, actually. It never even occurred to me, but the Broncos, too. You know, Bradley Chubb one side, Von Miller the other side. You need to block both those sides really well. So that makes absolute sense to me in terms of Trent Brown. Getting back to Carr, I mean, obviously, I think one of the things that came up last year for me watching him play was, you know, we thought about the Amari Cooper thing. And when the Cowboys got Amari Cooper, it transformed their offense. It gave Dak Prescott a weapon that he hadn't had previously. And we saw the impact on Dak Prescott. He was a better player from that point forward. We didn't really think as much about the flip side of that, which was that, oh, now Derek Carr, who's not exactly playing at a super high level, not playing at a dominant level by any means, now he's down Amari Cooper. Now his top receiver is Jordy Nelson, who our top wide receiver, I should say, is Jordy Nelson, who, of course, now is retired. And his top receiver for most of the year, regardless of position, was probably Jared Cook, who ended up leaving the team in free agency and went to go sign with the New Orleans Saints, if I'm not mistaken. And in terms of that tight end spot, what do you see happening for the Raiders this year? Do you see a sort of obvious candidate to sort of take over Jared Cook's role?
Yeah, right now Darren Waller is just is the number one tight end. He's listed as the number one tight end on their unofficial depth chart. He's more of a flex tight end, sort of like Jared Cook. Jared Cook was never a real great blocker, but they acquired Waller late last year from the Baltimore Ravens. Waller has had some off field troubles to begin his career, but he seems like he's on track now. And honestly, in practice, just watching him, Waller looks like the real deal. I mean, every single time he's played, he's in a one-on-one situation. He's won. He's made a lot of big plays in practice. He just looks way too fast for linebackers, and he's too big for safeties. So I don't know how it's going to translate on the field when the games really start. But just from watching him live in practice and listening to coaches talk about him, he's been unstoppable in practice so far, and I don't know if that just means that the Raiders still can't cover tight ends because they haven't been able to cover tight ends in years, or Waller's just that good. So I'm curious to find out. He's been out with a sprained shoulder for the last couple weeks, so he wasn't able to play against the Rams in joint practices or in that preseason game, but he started ramp up activity now. I don't know if he's going to play on Thursday, but I think he'll be ready for the dress rehearsal in week three.
Yeah, that's obviously the biggest game of the preseason for the guys who are going to be playing as the ones, theoretically. In terms of Carr, I know he bought a house in Las Vegas. I believe it's next to John Gruden's house. I'm not sure. But
yeah, it is.
Yeah, it seems like his plan, you know, is to be the starting quarterback for this team when they make the move to Las Vegas. Now, from the Raiders' perspective, they can get out of this deal next year and only owe $5 million in dead money, which for a team that doesn't have necessarily, should have cap flexibility next year, it's not exactly an onerous commitment to have $5 million in dead money. So I mean, do you think the organization views this as sort of, this is the year where we have to figure out what we have with Derek Carr, and if he's not, if we're not sure he's the guy, we're moving on after the year? You know, is there, you think, a threshold he has to hit or a level of play he has to hit for the Raiders to stick with him going forward?
I think so. I think he hasn't played well in the last couple of years, and we talked about, you know, there are several reasons for that, but the bottom line is you have to produce in NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think that if he has another bad to mediocre year, that would make three years in a row. Mm-hmm. We all know John Gruden is not a very patient guy.
That's true.
And they didn't publicly give him very strong endorsements during the mm-hmm. draft process when there was all these rumors floating around that they were looking at a quarterback. And I don't have evidence for this, but I sort of believe that if Kyler Murray did fall down to four, mm-hmm. I think that the Raiders would have drafted him, but he didn't fall down to four.
Right.
So Carr gets another year. Like you said, the Raiders can get out of that contract next year. And I think that he has to prove himself and have a really strong year for the Raiders. They built this offense around him. They gave him weapons. They made his protection better. So he has no more excuses. He has to produce this year. And the NFL is a results-based business, and if he doesn't do well, I think they might move on.
Do you think it's something where they might consider in midseason giving Mike Glennon or Nathan Peterman some reps if they think Carr is struggling?
I don't think that Peterman or Glennon have done enough in practice to be sort of looked as a potential replacement for Carr. Mm-hmm. So I think Carr he's not going to have a short leash this year just because there's just not enough. I don't think Glennon or Peterman have shown enough to warrant kind of to challenge Carr for playing time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll have this entire year to really prove himself and solidify himself.
I mean, that makes sense. I know that Nathan Peterman did have that 50-yard run. I'm happy it worked out for him that way, but yeah, it does seem like you kind of know what those guys are, and that, you know, it's better to give Carr a full 16 games. And it did seem like, I could be wrong, but it seemed like he got better a little bit as the season went along last year, no?
No, he definitely did. I think as Gruden's offense is tough to pick up, mm-hmm. So it takes some time. And I think as he got more comfortable in the offense, and I think he got used to playing with pressure.
Right.
To begin his career, the Raiders actually had a really good offensive line mm-hmm. at the start of his career. And I think last year was the most pressure that he's ever faced in his entire career. And at first, it was pretty bad in the beginning. And as he went along, he started making plays under pressure. He started mm-hmm. making plays out of structure more. And I believe his PFF grade reflects that. He played much better towards the end of last season when nobody was sort of paying attention to the Raiders.
Right.
So, hopefully for him, he could carry that on to this year.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you said, I mean, you look at John Gruden's history with the Buccaneers, he did not have a quarterback lead his team in passing yards three consecutive seasons. So we know he's a guy who loves that scouting process, loves the process of developing young quarterbacks. We will see what happens. Obviously, a really fascinating offensive situation for the Raiders there. All right, we'll be back with Ted in a moment, but as I'm sure Ted knows, and as you probably also know, HBO Sports, NFL Films, and the Oakland Raiders have teamed up for an unfiltered, all-access look at what it takes to make it in the National Football League on Hard Knocks Training Camp with the Oakland Raiders. The new season of the groundbreaking sports reality series spotlights this historic AFC West franchise that has an intriguing mix of established veterans, highly regarded rookie hopefuls, and free agent acquisitions under head coach John Gruden, as we've talked about during this podcast segment. And don't miss Hard Knocks Training Camp with the Oakland Raiders. There's new episodes every Tuesday at 10 p.m. only on HBO. Now back to the show. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, the Raiders have four first-round picks, currently still on rookie deals, Carl Joseph, Gerrion Conley, Clelin Ferrell, and Jonathan Abram, the last two 2019 first-round picks. Which one of those four guys do you think is most important for the development of this defense in 2019?
I would say Conley is extremely, because he's another guy who played really well towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. He had a signature game against Antonio Brown against the Steelers, where he held him to under 50 yards, I think, and mm-hmm. had a really nice pass deflection against him in crunch time. So if he could develop into the number one corner that the Raiders thought they got late in the first round, then it's going to do wonders for this defense, because Gunther wants to press his corners, and when you have press corners on the outside, you can be more aggressive. I'm still worried about the Raiders' pass rush. Arden Key seems to be the Raiders' most consistent pass rush right now. Cleveland Farrell was drafted as they drafted him not as a pure pass rusher. They liked his run defense a lot too. So last year the Raiders had by far the worst pass rush in the league. I don't know if they did enough to quite improve it yet. So I think they need the secondary to hold up extremely well. So Conley has to be part of that. So I think Conley is the guy that has to take that big jump this year.
Are you expecting or projecting or at least, you know, hoping that Arden Key is kind of the guy who takes a big step forward on defense besides Conley?
Yeah, but he's going to be used more as a situational rusher. They drafted him not to be a starter. They wanted him to be a situational rusher, but obviously with trading Khalil Mack last year and with some injuries, Arden Key was forced to start and play a lot of downs. And I think that he's a guy that would be better if you limited his snap count, let him rush the passer when he's fresh. And so far in camp, he's looked like he's taken a big step up.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It seems like, you know, he has that potential. He was a guy who it seemed like, you know, people expected to come off the board maybe a little earlier in the draft. But I think someone who certainly has much of upside. And I feel like there's certainly talent here. You know, I'm thinking about, like, I wrote that the Giants were going to improve, and I look at the Giants defense and I close my eyes and I just shudder. I can't see a scenario where the Giants are going to be good on defense. But the Raiders, I mean, there's at least talent here. You know, it might not work out. It might not be a good defense, but there's certainly, you know, guys who have upside. There's a lot of young players, guys on rookie deals, and then there are, you know, some veterans with meaningful talent. Eddie LaMarcus Joyner, you know, a guy who was a really impressive safety, especially back in 2017. He wasn't maybe quite as good in 2018, but I mean, there's definitely a lot of, you know, guys where if things break right, this could be a really promising defense a year from now.
Yeah, and LaMarcus Joyner is playing exclusively nickel, by the way. I think there's some confusion because of there's some confusion because the depth chart listed him as a free safety, but he actually is very excited and wanted to come to Oakland because he wanted to move back into that nickel spot exclusively. Mm-hmm. So right now you have Jonathan Abram, the rookie first round pick, starting at safety. You have Carl Joseph starting at safety, and LaMarcus Joyner is playing full time nickel. And in Gunther's defense, that nickel position is extremely important. They have to play multiple roles, and Joyner's been he's been a leader at that spot. He's played very well, and it was a major weakness for the Raiders last year. So it makes sense that they wanted Joyner to come to play that position and kind of just lock it down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a guy who, you know, his versatility in Los Angeles before 2017 sort of caused the Rams to kind of struggle. He'd go back and forth, play different spots, and then it seemed like he really improved when they gave him one role, and that was free safety. But we know he has the ability also to play in the slots. So if he plays there full time or plays nickel corner full time, that could be a really promising opportunity for the Raiders. In terms of just, you know, thinking about the rest of the league, I'll finish up with this with you, Ted. You know, last year it seemed like the most sort of exciting offense, maybe the wrong word, like the most mystery on offense that I wanted to see heading into the season was the Oakland Raiders. It was what John Gruden was going to dial up after being out of the league for a decade. This year, in terms of the, you know, various new offenses, whether it's a new coordinator or a new head coach, which offense are you most excited to see that we don't think we really know much about right now when it comes to the 2019 season?
This might be a cheap answer, but I'm really excited to see what Cliff Kingsbury is going to do with the Arizona Cardinals. Because, you know, like we've seen pieces of the air raid in the NFL. We've seen the different coordinators borrow different concepts. Todd Monken ran kind of his version of the air raid last year with the Buccaneers, and they put up numbers, but they also threw a lot of interceptions as well. So I'm really curious to see what Cliff Kingsbury, who is sort of an innovator in the air raid with kind of blending some pro style concepts while he was at Texas Tech there, how he's going to play or how he's going to run his offense with the Arizona Cardinals. And we've seen Kyler Murray play a little bit in the preseason. He looks like he's going to be really good. So I'm just really curious to see how that marriage is going to work out in Arizona.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it. And Ted, I mean, we'll have you back on during the year to talk about that, talk about some of the other offensive trends happening in the league, and talk about the Raiders themselves. But until then, We want to get you on a level with Maze and Mina on Twitter. So where can people follow you to start making sure that happens?
FB_film analysis.
And, of course, check out Ted's work as your dog is out here also vouching for you in social media. Does your dog have an Instagram account? Or do your dogs have Instagram account, I should say?
That is actually my neighbor's dog.
Really?
Yeah. He just barks a lot. So I apologize for that. My dog is sleeping, and yeah, he's getting all scared because the other dog is barking. But all good.
It's all good. See, you are an excellent dog trainer. That is another one of your many skills when it comes to your work. And you can check out Ted's work at The Athletic. Ted, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, Jeff Schwartz of SB Nation, Ted Wynn of The Athletic. We'll have more audio coming next week. Definitely NFL season is about to get here. We have some exciting guests, some former guests of the show, maybe making a reappearance here in the weeks to come on The Bill Barnwell Show. Thanks so much for listening.